not safe here. Season 1, The Outcast. Episode 5, The Shapeshifter. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. Please start at episode 1. Betty stood at the base of the crack in the wall, a pool of blood at her feet. She peered through it, into the woods outside, which was now misty and slightly more illuminated with moonlight. Betty moved to the edge of the couch and pushed it across the floor, out of the way. Just as in her first dream, she was compelled to do it, even though she didn't want to. She moved again to the foot of the hole and with a deep breath, stepped through it, back into the night. It felt different, suddenly. It was like she had stepped into a different forest than the one that led her to the cabin. It was lighter out. Betty realized it must be dawn. Had she been in the cabin for that long? Time felt hazy. She heard a rustling ahead and hid behind a tree. After a moment, she peered out into the mist. She saw shapes in the distance. Betty squinted. The shapes moved closer, trudging through the fog. She could see that they were people, walking wordlessly in a line. They were old and young. Some carried babies. They seemed to float. The bodies frowned and looked at nothing. They wore brown or beige. Betty couldn't tell what time period they were from. She could hardly tell what they looked like, but she knew they were from another era. She stared from behind a tree. Their eyes cast downwards, they marched past her, and she felt the weight of their exhaustion as they did. Betty shifted her weight in her feet, and a stick broke beneath her. The crack echoed outwards. Betty's stomach dropped in fear. A smaller person in the line, a girl, heard the sound. Her eyes snapped up. They locked onto Betty. Betty threw herself behind the tree. She pressed her back against it, looking up at the leaves cutting into the milky sky. It was completely silent except for the pounding of her heart. She waited a beat, then as slowly as she could, peeked from behind the tree. The girl who had seen her was alone now. She sat with her back towards Betty. She was in a clearing in the forest, about 100 feet away. Betty squinted and saw a line of people facing the girl. They stood still in the mist. They looked like ghosts. Betty could tell that the girl was now separate from them. She could feel their anger. The girl sat looking towards the ground, her spine curved like a C. She heaved as though she was crying. Betty wanted to leave, but she was stuck there. She couldn't look away. All of a sudden, the girl seemed to grow bigger. The C of her spine bubbled. The mist swirled as the people watching her ran. Their screams were muffled. They reached her in waves. Betty's feet felt like boulders, but she managed to peel them from the roots of the tree and run away. Screams rolled over Betty as she ran through the trees. Betty felt the girl behind her, heard her feet pounding the ground. Each step got louder, sounded heavier, until the earth shook. Betty was thrown to the ground. She opened her eyes and saw the ceiling of her dorm room. She heard the familiar sound of Katrina next to her, screaming herself awake. Betty found Miss DeSilva the next morning. She was fully skipping classes now, no longer worried about what the cloisters would do to her. They were already spying on her and trying to scare her, although her dreams were scaring her enough. Betty squeezed her eyes shut. Her heart pounded in her chest as she sailed by her classrooms on the way to the library, head down. Miss DeSilva could tell something was wrong. "What's going on, Betty?" she said as Betty walked up to the front desk, her black hoodie pulled tightly around her face. "Can we talk somewhere private?" Betty asked. Miss DeSilva wore a bold plaid white on maroon dress. She narrowed her eyes with a mix of concern and suspicion. "Sure," she said. Betty followed her as she walked deeper into the library. "You know," she said over her shoulder with a smirk, "you're more incognito with a looser hood." "Oh," said Betty, who was pulling at the drawstrings. "Right now it looks like you've framed your face." She laughed, and Betty tried to smile. They walked together towards the back of the library. Miss DeSilva's office was a tiny room without windows. It was filled with books and strewn papers. Without shelves, they lay around the room in piles. She moved one pile off a chair so Betty could sit. "So?" she said, as she took the chair across from Betty. Their knees almost touched. Her desk was invisible under the books. "I think I need your help," she said. Miss De Silva nodded encouragingly. "You're good at piecing things together, right? I mean, with the twins' gothic horror story research," Betty continued. "I mean, yeah, I guess so," she said. "That's the job of a researcher." "Well, something is happening, and I don't know what it is. And this has to do with your dream research and Scandinavia and the Lakeshore phone numbers, right?" She took a deep breath. "I think girls go missing from this school," Betty said abruptly. Miss De Silva sat up straight. She rubbed her neck. Betty leaned forward. "Look, I'm sorry, Miss De Silva. I don't want to get you in trouble. I just can't figure this out on my own." Miss De Silva looked at Betty and smiled sadly. "I think you're right," she said. Betty gasped. "You do?" Miss De Silva nodded. "I found the school registry from before my time. Eliza Sands was enrolled as a freshman here 3 years ago. She didn't show up on the roster the following year." She started fumbling through the papers on her desk. Betty stood as she cried, "I talked to her parents." Miss De Silva stopped and looked at her, eyes wide. "What did they say?" "You know what you were saying about conversations? Well, they didn't seem to want to talk about it. Like they weren't dying to know anything or to understand why we were asking about it. They seemed mad at Eliza. They thought she ran away. They didn't seem concerned with the school at all." Miss De Silva shook her head. "Girls disappear all the time. We only hear about a fraction of them." She pointed towards her wall in an unintelligible direction. "The High River Indian Reservation is right next door. Do you think any of their missing girls are in the news?" Betty shook her head. "We decide who we care about," Miss De Silva continued. "Most girls are low on the list." She went back to the papers on her desk. After a moment, she held up a folder. "Here," she said. Betty looked through it. It was a list of names per year, per class, over the last 5 years. It was every student enrolled at the Cloisters. "This is amazing," Betty said. "Thank you. Can I make a copy?" "Why don't you take it? I don't want it accidentally sitting in the copy machine. I'm not exactly supposed to have it." Betty nodded and slipped it into her backpack. "Here's what I can't figure out," Betty continued. "In our dream, we tripped over this moss-covered route. It was memorable because we fell, and that led us to finding the cabin." "Wait," Miss De Silva said. Then she stood up and closed the door. Behind it was a rolling chalkboard. She wrote tree root at the bottom left corner and dream cabin above it. She drew a line in between them. "Okay, and then in Miss Ronsom's class, Kat and I noticed a tree root that looked exactly the same as the one in our dream, but the moss was red. Turns out it was lichen, and when we measured it later, it was 150 years old. "Whoa," said Miss De Silva. "The early 1800s? That's wild. And that's a lichen your teacher told you was more common in Scandinavia than here, right?" "Yes," cried Betty. Miss De Silva wrote 1800 to 1850 Scandinavia next to the tree root and drew a small line in between them. "And what about those coordinates you found on a map?" Betty looked down. "We found that in Mr. J's office," she said, heart pounding in her chest. She looked up with one eye at Miss De Silva, who considered her carefully for a moment, then made a zipping motion over her lips. Betty smiled a thank you and continued. "We found it in this hidden area of his desk. I mean, obviously not that hidden. We couldn't really understand it, but it had coordinates for Norway over a map of this forest around the school." Miss De Silva wrote map of Norway plus school next to tree root in 1800 to 1850 Scandinavia and made a small triangle among the three. "Huh," she said, taking a step back. "And Zelda went missing last January. Eliza Sands 2 years before that in May." Miss De Silva wrote their names on the right side of the chalkboard with dotted lines to the cabin. "And you said you saw them in the cabin?" "Sort of," Betty said, sighing. "This is grim." Miss De Silva grimaced like she already knew. "We heard the sound of Zelda's voice and we saw Eliza's arm." "Just her arm?" Miss De Silva cried. Betty nodded. "Half of us went upstairs in the dream. They found body parts." Miss De Silva held up her hand. "Wait, explain this dream to me." Betty swallowed. "We've had three dreams. The first one was exactly the same. We were being chased and we found shelter in a cabin and we heard Zelda moaning upstairs and then a loud crash. The next one, half of us went upstairs where we saw an arm. We think that's Eliza Sands' arm. The rest of us found a hole in the back wall covered in blood." In our last dream, half of us found even more body parts in a large red circle upstairs in the cabin. The rest of us saw a bunch of people walking through the woods. One of them seemed to shapeshift. Jesus, Ms. De Silva said. They stood next to each other and stared at the board for a minute. It was completely silent. There's one more thing, Betty said. Miss Silva looked at her, eyes wide. We found a carving in our door last night, of a bird or something. What? Miss De Silva put her hand over her mouth for a moment. This sounds ominous. Maybe you should talk to Mr. Wilbertson. No, Betty almost shouted. No, I don't trust him. I actually think I saw him in the dorms the other night. I think maybe he's behind the carving. Miss De Silva was silent. Please, Betty said. You're the only one I can trust. You and my friends. Betty smiled. She hadn't heard herself say that before. Miss De Silva didn't say anything, but she drew a bird in the right middle of the board. She didn't connect it to anything. Birds represent all kinds of beliefs. Good luck and bad luck, eternal life and death. Could you tell what kind of bird it was? Not really, said Betty. Maybe a raven? Oh, God, said Miss De Silva. Quoth the raven nevermore? It usually represents a bad omen. We should investigate what it means in Scandinavian culture. Betty stared at the board. I just don't understand what Zelda and Eliza's disappearance has to do with Scandinavian immigration, she said. That's the question you have to answer, said Miss De Silva. She pointed to the board. Remember this, she said as she erased it. Everyone at lunch was antsy. Katrina jiggled in her seat, and Delia cracked her knuckles like a prize fighter. Everyone was wearing black, except for Kim, who wore fuchsia jeans with a matching top. What's your deal? Delia asked her. I'm manifesting, she said. I refuse to be morose like you people. Oh, so severed body parts are no big deal to you? Katrina asked. I'm sorry, dreams aren't real, Kim snapped back. Zelda was real. Eliza was real, Betty said softly. Our dream is telling us how to find them. Our dream is telling us that this place is whack, Kim said. Well, we already knew that, Tracy replied. She ate a French fry. Betty thinks Mr. Wilbertson is spying on her, Katrina said. Shh. Betty put her hand over Katrina's mouth. Katrina picked up her cupcake and lunged towards Betty's face with it. Betty dodged it, giggling. You guys are so cute, Delia said. Oh my God, I didn't want to talk about this here, Betty said. About Mr. Wilbertson. Yeah, what the fuck, Tracy said. Betty motioned for them to lean in. They did. I saw him in the hallway a couple nights ago. At least I think I did. What was he doing? Delia asked. Was he jerking off? Tracy made the motion with her hands. Ew, said Kim, pushing Tracy away. No, he was just standing in the dark, staring at me. Okay, that is super creepy. Kim covered her face with her hands. And then he carved a crow on our door, Katrina said, shoving the last of her cupcake in her mouth. This place is fucked. Excuse me? Delia said. What do crows have to do with anything? Betty rubbed her temples. She had a headache. I don't know, she said. Nothing makes sense anymore. They all looked at each other silently. Just then Kat approached their table. She sat next to Betty. Betty looked up and smiled. Hey, she said. So, are you our friend now? Katrina said to Kat. Excuse me? Kat settled her eyes steadily on Katrina. I mean, I'm just trying to keep track. Last I saw, you were best pals with Valerie. Lay off, Katrina, Kim said. Then she looked at Kat. But yeah, Val is persona non grata here, so I think we deserve the backstory. Can we all chill out, please? Betty said, blushing. No, it's cool, Kat said, taking a bite of her sandwich. She took her time chewing. I get why you wouldn't trust me. But I only hung around Valerie for the drugs. I stopped and she started picking on Betty. How generous of you, Katrina said. I didn't know Valerie had drugs, Delia said. Tracy laughed. Of course you didn't. Kat glared at Katrina. It was the first time Betty had seen her anything but nonplussed. It must be nice to have a crew, she said. Katrina stared back. Kat continued. I never did. Katrina opened her mouth to say something. Betty stopped her with a quick shake of her head. Well, I did once, Kat continued. Freshman year. But my friend left. Wait, who? Betty said, sitting up. My friend Chantal. We were super close our first year here, but then she didn't come back. I never heard from her again. I don't remember Chantal, Tracy said. She was the only other black girl in the school. Of course you didn't, Kat replied. That's not fair, Tracy said. Isn't it? Kim challenged. Tracy looked down at her food. So Chantal disappeared 2 years ago? Betty asked. She reached into her backpack and pulled out the roster. Her heart raced. Everybody leaned in. What is that? Delia asked. Kat looked at the paper and continued. I don't know if she disappeared. I just never saw her again. This is the school roster for the last 5 years. How did you get that? Katrina asked, sounding impressed. It doesn't matter. She turned to Kat. So she was here 2 years ago. 2.5. We were freshmen. Betty found the freshman class list and scanned her finger down the list of names. Chantal Green. Her finger hovered over the name. Her last name was Green? Kat nodded. Betty looked at the list of sophomores the following year. Her name wasn't there. Did you try to get in touch? Delia asked. Yeah, I wrote her a letter and I called her house twice, but I never heard back. I figured she didn't want to talk or was busy. Betty and Katrina exchanged a look. What? Kim said, eyeing them both. Do you think Chantal disappeared too? That sounds just like Eliza, Betty said. Eliza disappeared between school terms 3 years ago, Chantal the next year, and Zelda the year after, except people noticed that. Kat sat perfectly still. She stared at Betty. Betty noticed her eyes moving back and forth like she was reading, but she was thinking, like she was rereading her memories. Finally, she said, You know, I thought it once we started dreaming, but I didn't want to think it. None of us do, Delia said. We have to find that cabin, Betty said. Spread the word. We're meeting at the north edge of the woods tonight. Where we found the trilolichen? Kat asked. Betty nodded. Are you crazy? Kim asked. No way. Come on, Kim. You can be our flashlight. You could see your outfit from space, Katrina said. Kim, please, Betty said, reaching her hands across the table and placing them flat in front of her. If we understand this, we can beat it. This school is picking us off one by one. Correction, Kim said. It's picking you off. Didn't you say you had a bird marking on your door? I already saved you once. I'm not doing it again. Betty pulled her hands back. Her face burned. You don't get it, Kim, Katrina said. It's all of us. One of us, all of us, it doesn't matter. If anything, you're more in danger if you stay here. You'll be all by yourself in the dorms. That seemed to work. Kim shivered. I'm in, Tracy said. Me too, Delia said. Me too, Kat said. Fine, Kim said, rolling her eyes. 9 o'clock, said Betty. Spread the word. Betty went to Mr. J's class after lunch. She had a feeling that she should. She walked into the classroom behind Katrina and immediately saw Valerie in her seat at the front row. She smiled at her. Betty, confused, looked away. The last couple of days, Valerie had either glared at her or averted her eyes when Betty glared back. The smile was wide, almost gleeful. Betty shook it off as she walked to her desk in the back. My friends, Mr. J shouted from atop his desk, legs wide, arms outspread. Everyone turned towards him, already enraptured. Even the girls clustered in groups, mid-gossip. They stayed standing, clutching their books to their chest. Mr. J picked up a small book next to him and smiled at it. Today, he said with a dramatic pause, today we are taking it back to Beowulf. There were some groans. Mr. J hopped up and paced in the front. Do I hear opposition? He pointed excitedly to the girl in the front row near the door. Amanda, what say you? Amanda had long, thick brown hair and pink skin. She wore an olive button-down dress. I don't know, Mr. J. It's not even in English. She giggled up at him. Not in English? He shouted in full comedic effect. It's the original English. Everyone laughed. Everyone but Katrina, Kat, and Betty. They exchanged a look. Mr. J noticed. My trio in the back. What say you? Betty blushed. Aren't we jumping in time a lot? Katrina challenged. I thought you were supposed to teach us different eras in literature. You know, like a teacher. Oh, Katrina, I'm surprised at you, Mr. J said. How boring! He clapped dramatically as he said it. Betty jumped. We don't study texts from the Renaissance or pre to post-modernism. He held up his hands in dramatic air quotes. We study how men overcome monsters. It's man at our most base. It's what makes us human throughout history. He seemed to have forgotten there was a whole classroom in front of him. He stared into space like he was gathering his resolve. Earth to Mr. J, Katrina said, snickering. He snapped his head towards her. He kept it still as his eyes moved sideways to Betty. He narrowed them. Then he smiled. So yes, we do jump around a lot. He sat back on his desk and surveyed the room. So what do we think? I thought it was sublime, Valerie said. It's so old, but it's as exciting as an action film. Katrina stuck her finger down her throat. Very astute, Valerie, Mr. J said. He jumped up again and walked towards a side window. The girls at the opposite side of the room got up from their desk and gathered at the nearby windowsill. What's most exciting about this piece is how little we know about it. We know it takes place in pagan Scandinavia. Betty gasped. She hoped no one heard her. Slowly, she locked eyes with Kat, who was at attention as well. But what we don't know, Mr. J continued, is if it was written during that time or simply set in that time. Are there any clues? It feels like a moral tale, so it has to be Christian, Valerie said. Betty saw Mr. J wink at her. I don't know, one of the girls perched on the windowsill said. She wore lilac jeans and a white button-down. I felt sorry for Grendel, and especially Grendel's mom. I feel like Christians are more like the bad people are bad and the good people are good. Grendel pretty much sucks, said a girl with dirty blonde hair. She leaned her chair against the back wall so the front two legs stuck out in the air. I mean, he was constantly killing people until Beowulf ripped his head off. Everyone laughed. What is he supposed to be anyway? She asked Mr. J. We don't know, he replied, standing and getting excited again. We know he's a monster, but we don't really know what he looks like. I believe he's a troll. If he's from the Old Norse era, that makes the most sense. But he could be a simple giant. Bigfoot! Someone yelled. Betty could no longer hear the commotion around her. The word troll echoed in her head. She turned to Katrina, stricken. Katrina rolled her eyes at her, missing the reference. Troll, she thought. A monster? Could that be the connection? She was sweating. She rubbed the back of her neck. That's crazy, she thought. The cabin wall flashed into her mind, ripped open, dripping with blood. Would she be leading the school into the jaws of a monster tonight? Betty shut her eyes tight and shook her head. You okay? She heard Kat whisper. She nodded at her, lips pressed together. She was losing it. The school was getting to her. There's no such thing as trolls, she thought. She repeated it to herself. Around her, the class was wrapping up. The girls were packing up their books and trickling out of class. They were passing their journals to Mr. J. I'm looking forward to the next chapter of your nightmares, she heard Mr. J say. She rushed from the room. She needed to lie down. She would rest in her dorm room for a bit, then head back to the library. Miss De Silva would know what to do. Betty, I'm especially looking forward to reading your thoughts, she heard Mr. J call after her as she practically ran down the hall. There was someone in her room. The door was open. The tiniest sliver of light shone into the hallway. Betty froze. She glanced up at the carving. It was still there, a freshly cut raven outline. Betty took a deep breath. There was no one else in the hallway with her. She leaned her ear into the door. There was a rustling sound, then silence. Betty held her breath. She heard footsteps behind her. She turned sharply, her heart pounding in her ears. It was Katrina. I was looking for you, she said loudly before Betty could shush her. What are you doing? She said as she brushed past her and pushed open the door. No, Betty shouted, but it was too late. Katrina looked at her like she was crazy before she saw what was in their room. What the fuck? Katrina yelled. It was Miss Albert. She stood in the middle of their dorm room with her arms folded across her chest. Betty's mattress was leaning against the wall. Three small plastic bags lay on the bed slats below. Language, Miss Albert said, but she kept her eyes on Betty. You can't just come into our room like this, Katrina yelled. Who told you that? Miss Albert said, smiling at Katrina. Your room is our room. You are guests here. She turned her head to Betty, frozen in the doorway. Come in, Betty. We need to talk. Betty's face and neck burned. She stood frozen in the doorway. Why? She asked. Miss Albert stopped smiling. Because I found drugs under your mattress. You have let Katrina rub off on you, she said. Those aren't mine, Betty croaked. She held onto the doorframe so she wouldn't fall down, but she saw the bags on the flats of her bed frame. Three clear bags lined up in a perfect row, two filled with white pills, one with almost brown-looking grass. "This is bullshit," Katrina said. "Someone planted them there."
"Right," Miss Albert said. She took a step forward.
"You had potential, Betty. You really did."
"But I didn't do it,"
Betty whispered, knowing it was futile. "You can save your breath for Mr. Wilbertson," Miss Albert said as she took another step forward and grabbed Betty's wrist.
"No,"
Betty tried to shout, but it came out as a groan.
"Don't touch her," Katrina yelled, throwing herself in front of the door.
"It's okay," Betty said to Katrina, somehow the person in the position to calm everyone down. "It's just a mistake. I'll clear it up with Mr. Wilbertson. I'll be back really soon." They both knew that wasn't true. Katrina still breathed deeply with anger, but stepped aside. She looked scared. Miss Albert put her hand on Betty's back as they walked down the hallway towards the stairs. Her heels were muted on the thick carpet. Betty saw some doors opening as she walked by. Some girls peeked out to catch the commotion.
"Back in your room, girls," Miss Albert said without turning her head.
Betty saw Valerie in one of the doorways. She smiled brightly at her and waved with a twinkle of her fingers. Then Betty knew. It was her. She felt like she was going to throw up. Miss Albert's heels came back to life on the stairway. They descended into the shadows of the lower floors and its dark wood. Miss Albert kept her hand on Betty's back the entire time. It felt heavy and warm. Betty looked at her, but she kept her eyes forward, almost as if Betty wasn't there. Her forest green collar was so stiff it rubbed against her jawline. Her lips, as always, were bright red. They walked down the hallway lined with lockers and headmaster portraits. They turned and walked down another hallway with large windows that opened onto the forest on either side. The late afternoon dusk settled into the branches. They moved gently, jostled by a breeze. They turned into another hallway, this one without windows and a lower ceiling. The click-clack of Miss Albert's heels again silenced by the carpet. Betty stole a glance at her again.
"I really didn't do it. I promise," Betty said, hearing how weak it sounded.
Miss Albert didn't even acknowledge that she had heard her. She turned Betty towards an arched double door and stopped. "Save it for Mr. Wilbertson," she said, "although you might want to make it more convincing." She knocked three times quickly. The sound disappeared into the thick wood, the heavy carpets, the drapes of battle scenes lining the walls. The left door creaked open just enough to outline the width of Mr. Wilbertson. He wore a navy three-piece suit, his neck pressed against his collar. "Betty," he said, looking down at her. She turned to Miss Albert, expecting the explanation to come from her, but she had vanished. She turned back to Mr. Wilbertson. "Come in," he said. He stepped back and opened his arm like he was inviting her to a tea party. The office walls and ceiling were painted a deep red wine hue. Bookcases stretched across the east wall. A ladder leaned on the top shelf. There were no windows. It smelled like mint, and it felt humid. Betty walked hesitantly to a chair in front of the large, shiny wooden desk. Behind it was a large portrait of an older man, not unlike Mr. Wilbertson, who seemed to stare straight at Betty. "He was the first headmaster of the cloisters," he said. "Mr. Bennett Perdue." Betty nodded as she sat. Bennett's eyes followed her. Mr. Wilbertson sat at his desk. He came upon this forest and knew it was the perfect place to rehabilitate young women, to grow them among the trees. They stared at each other in silence for a moment. Betty felt the heat in her cheeks. Her heart pounded in her ears.
"Betty," he said. Then he looked up to the ceiling. "What's going on, Betty?"
"Nothing," she said. She stared at the light reflecting off the top of his desk. "Nothing. Okay." Mr. Wilbertson stood and walked around the desk to the chair next to her. He unbuttoned his jacket, then his vest, and leaned forward. He was close. He smelled sour.
"You are skipping classes, sneaking around. There are drugs in your room. Is that not a cry for help, Betty?"
Betty shook her head. She couldn't look at him. She could only hear him breathing.
"Betty," he said. Then he put his hand on her knee.
It was so heavy, like a cut of raw meat. Betty flinched. He held steady. She looked down, willing herself to disappear. She felt his hand start to slide up her leg, very slowly.
She tried to push her chair back, but its legs stuck in the carpet. Then a shot of anger exploded inside of her, a lightning bolt of rage. She jolted her knees to the right so hard, Mr. Robertson's hand was displaced. It retreated back to his lap. She lifted her head to meet his eyes. "What happened to Zelda?" she said. He betrayed no emotion, like she had just asked what his favorite pizza was.
"Nobody knows. It's very unfortunate."
"Nobody?" Betty challenged. She felt her anger spread through her arms and legs.
"She ran away when it was still so cold."
He looked at the wall like there was a window there, as if he could see the forest on the other side.
"She resisted our help. Very unfortunate," Mr. Robertson said again.
"What happened to Eliza Sands? To Chantal Green?" Her fingers and toes tingled.
"You are looking for distractions, Betty. It is time to look inward."
He scoot forward in his chair until his knees touched hers. Betty slammed her hand on the desk. It made a much smaller sound than she had intended and stung her hand.
"You didn't answer the question. Why do girls disappear from the cloisters?"
Mr. Wilbertson grabbed her wrist with a swiftness Betty did not know he had, and suddenly his face was in hers. She could see the clean line of his mustache above his lip.
"Do you feel that?" he said, holding her own red palm up to her face. "That stings, doesn't it? You did that to yourself."
He was almost whispering, but she could feel the tremor underneath.
"You were lucky the cloisters found a home for you. Your parents were at their wits' end. Their daughter kicked out of 3 different schools for starting fights. If you weren't here, you would be in a juvenile detention center. Your violence, Betty, that is what you must confront."
Betty's eyes pooled with water. She shook her head. "It wasn't like that," she started.
"You broke a girl's nose. You gave another girl a concussion. Do you deny responsibility? Like you are doing for the drugs we found in your room?"
She shook her head. "Did you call my parents?" she croaked. She looked down again. A tear spilled down her left cheek.
"Of course," he said. "They no longer want anything to do with you. It's the cloisters for you, or nothing."
Betty started fully crying then. The energy in her limbs retreated. Suddenly she was cold.
"Consider this a warning. The last one we will give. You will be supervised at all time by an associate of Miss Albert's. We move Katrina out of your room to minimize your distractions. You will maintain a 100% attendance rate and a 3.0 GPA, or we can no longer house you. And it sounds like you will have nowhere else to go."
Betty nodded, weakly.
"What was that?" Mr. Olbertson said, sitting back in his chair.
"Yes, sir," she said. When she stood, she had to almost step over Mr. Wilbertson's lap. He smiled, and then stood, blocking her way to the door. It was so quiet she heard his breath. She felt him staring, but couldn't meet his eyes.
"Why don't you expel me now?" she finally said, still looking down.
Mr. Wilbertson took her chin and pointed her face towards his, like he did when they first met.
"Because we believe in you."
He didn't let go until there was a knock at the door.
"That's Louise," he said. "She'll take you to your room."
He turned his back on her. She didn't notice until she was leaving a series of small frame sketchings of symbols lining the bottom shelf of his enormous bookcase. The last symbol of the series at the end of the row was a bird. The same bird that was carved into her door. Louise was young. She had wiry auburn hair and freckles on her upper arms. Betty saw goosebumps there. It was too cold for short sleeves. She felt the ice of Louise's fingertips on her elbow, even through her sweater. She didn't talk.
"It's my study hall now. I need to go to the library," Betty said.
Louise stopped and pulled some paper out of her bag. After a moment, she nodded and continued walking.
"I wasn't asking permission," Betty said, feeling the heat of anger return.
Louise didn't answer. She didn't say anything or even look at her on the meandering walk to the library. Her cold fingers kept their grip. A different woman stood at the information desk in the library. She looked like she was in her 50s. She was blonde and fat, elegant and impeccably dressed. She smiled wide at Betty and Louise, thrilled to have library visitors.
"Welcome," she stage whispered. "How can I help you?"
Betty's heart fluttered. "Where is Miss De Silva?" she said.
"Oh, I don't know. Today's my first day. It's been a whirlwind."
she laughed. Betty turned to Louise, stomping her foot. Where's Miss De Silva? Louise shrugged.
Was she the librarian before me? The new woman asked. I think she quit.
They didn't tell me, but that's what it seemed like.
She kept a smile on her face, but Betty saw beads of sweat at her hairline.
There was a beat of silence as Betty looked from Louise to the new librarian to Louise again. Then she took off running.
Oh!
She heard the librarian yelp, and she heard Louise's feet pounding behind her. She bolted through each archway down the main hall of the library, making a beeline for the back, towards Miss De Silva's office. She heard Louise panting behind her, and knocked a chair over as she passed it to block her way. A lone student at a study table looked up at the commotion. Betty got to the back of the hall, rounded the corner, and almost slammed herself into Miss De Silva's office. The door opened. The room was completely empty. There were no papers, no books. There was a desk and a chair neatly tucked in the corner of the room. The bookshelves were empty. It smelled of disinfectant. Louise grabbed her arm.
What did you do with Miss De Silva? She yelled.
Shh, Louise said, finally speaking. She yanked her out of the room. Betty was fully panicking now. They must have found out Miss De Silva was helping her. Did they hurt her? And where did they put Katrina? How could she talk to her? And Kat? And what about Kim and Delia and Tracy? Louise brought Betty up to her room. You'll be missing classes for the rest of the day. I'll bring up your homework assignments. The second thing, Louise said. She pushed Betty into her room and slammed the door. Betty heard a click behind her. Katrina's side of the room was bare. Her Liz Phair poster was gone. Her bed was stripped. Her closet door was open and a single hanger dangled there. Betty grabbed the door handle and tried to turn it. It wouldn't budge. She jostled it back and forth for several seconds before she yelled through the wood, "You can't lock me in here!" She tried again to budge the door handle with all her might before she gave up and slid to the floor. She put her head in her hands and wept. The clock read 8:47 p.m. Louise had brought Betty dinner and taken her plates. She stood outside the bathroom as Betty showered. "You can go to classes tomorrow if you behave," Louise had said before she closed the door. The click of the lock echoed in the silence. Betty pulled her black hoodie on and laced up her shoes. Her heart pounded in her chest as she lifted her window. The cold slapped her face. She took a deep breath and threw her leg over the edge. There was a small crevice on the roof between her window and the spire that faced it. She threw her other leg over, and she stood on the roof, heart pounding. She clutched the windowsill until her knuckles were white. She took one step to the right and kept her legs wide as she let go of the windowsill with her right hand and swung it over to the spire's window. "Please, please, please," she whispered to herself. She nestled her fingers under the lip of the windowsill and pushed up. It didn't budge. She looked down. Behind her was at least a 10-foot drop. It was so dark, the ground was blackness. She bent her knees to keep herself steady and swung her left hand to meet her right. With all 10 fingers, she pushed upwards on the spire's window again. She felt some movement and her stomach flipped. She moved one palm to the glass and kept the fingers of her other hand under the sill and pushed again with all her might. The window released with a smack and Betty lost her balance. She fell backwards. Her hand under the windowsill flailed through its opening and grabbed on tight. She hung from one arm for a moment before she found her feet under herself. She hoped she didn't yelp. She stood frozen for a moment, waiting to be caught. After what felt like an eternity, she took her free hand and pushed the window slowly upwards. It creaked. Betty grimaced. She kept pushing until it was open about a foot and a half. Then she stuck her head in. The room was musty and dark. From the light of the moon, she could make out cardboard boxes and old furniture. She hoisted herself up and her stomach pressed against the windowsill. She pushed her hands against the inside wall until most of her torso was inside. Then she walked her arms across the floor until her legs slid through the window. She stood, shaking. Betty prayed the door didn't lock from the outside. She tiptoed across the room, took a deep breath, and turned the doorknob. It was as smooth as silk. Betty almost cried, still shaking. The hallway was dark. The same weak light bulbs flickered from the ceiling. There was a stairway to her right, descending into pitch blackness. She felt along the curved banister as she tiptoed as quietly as she could down the stairs. On the sixth step, the wood groaned. Betty froze. She listened, but all she could hear was her heart. She exhaled shakily. She continued down the stairs as quietly as she could. At the bottom, she felt along the wall of the hallway. She knew there would be a door to the field somewhere. The grooves of the wallpaper rose and fell under her fingers. The corner of a side table pierced her thigh, but it didn't budge. She walked around it while her leg throbbed. Then she felt a pane of glass. She moved her hands down until she felt the wide handle of a push bar. She held her breath and pushed it open. A swoosh of cold air greeted her. She took off running. She could hear the chatter of the girls before she could see them. A crowd of about 24 of them stood at the edge of the forest where she and Kat had found the lichen. She heard their whispers when they saw her, and then she felt arms around her. "Oh my God, I thought you were a goner," Katrina whispered in her ear. Betty leaned into the hug. It took her a moment to realize she was crying. "Betty, are you okay?" Delia asked. "What did Mr. Robertson do to you?" Kim tugged gently at Betty's hair. She didn't have a chance to answer. Everyone looked at her. Their whispers had settled. They were waiting for her direction. "Let's go," she said, and they followed. Thank you so much for listening to season one of We Are Not Safe Here, The Outcast. Come back next week for episode 6. New episodes every Wednesday. If you like what you're hearing, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends. We are not safe here.